Hello, everybody. It's the Eclipse edition of the Microbrew Podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am host of the show. Kurt Hoag, my colleague at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, is on the other line. He was there on Sunday as the Milwaukee Brewers busted out those bats to wrap up the homestand with the Seattle Mariners. Actually, I don't even know. What was the final there? 14-4? 12-4? And wound up taking 2-3 against Seattle. So that's a pretty promising start. They are 6-2 after the first full week of the Major League Baseball season. Three series. Got two series wins and a tie. Not bad. Now they hit the road. Cincinnati, where the sun will disappear and hopefully the offense will not. And, Kurt, first of all, Kurt, let's talk about the important stuff here. Have you ever seen a solar eclipse? Do you know what it looks like when the sun turns off?
No solar eclipses for your boy. I lived in Wilmer, Minnesota during the last one. What was that, like 2017?
I have no idea.
And that was maybe the cloudiest day I've ever experienced.
What a bummer.
We literally could not tell a single thing was happening, which was a huge bummer because I needed some things to look forward to in Wilmer, Minnesota. I couldn't have Gus Varland carry me through every single day, JR. He only pitched one out of every five.
What about future Brewers third baseman Joey Ortiz?
Also, I didn't cover Joey Ortiz because I was in Wilmer for about 18 months, but only one Stingers season.
Okay. So you saw Gus Varland. Anybody else? Were there any other pro players on that team?
Pro players, but just minor leaguers. I don't think anyone else from the big. Oh, no, that's not true. Nick Mears, who might just be the Rockies closer within the next couple of weeks, which that's definitely a position that you don't want to be in. But nevertheless, still, could be a deep fantasy league stash if you're into that sort of thing. He was on that team too.
Very good. Anything is possible on the Rockies pitching staff. And right now that's true of the Milwaukee Brewers as well. I will tell you this. In 1999, the year of our Lord, I witnessed a solar eclipse. I was in Paris, France. I was, we had to get outside the city to see it, but it was the one and only time, Kurt, that I had been out of the country and there happened to be a solar eclipse during this 9-day run. And I saw it, total eclipse, fun times, saw it at a castle. I couldn't even tell you where, like which castle, that was pretty sweet. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm loosely looking forward to Monday. Although here in Milwaukee, we will not see the total eclipse. I know Bonnie Tyler lyrics will be floating through my head all day, regardless, despite the lack of a total eclipse. We will not have the view that they will in Cincinnati, Ohio, but still fun. Something to look forward to. Everyone loves it.
You strike me as a big Paris romantic.
You think so? Interesting. I would not think that I exude that particular vibe, but you know what? Maybe I don't know. Maybe it's the polo shirts give off some of that energy.
It's the bald head.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Lot more room for love.
Is it the way that I say carte blanche that perhaps gives that French energy off a little bit? Maybe.
Yes.
No. Yes. Yes. Okay.
That is it. Were you the one speaking French to themselves the other day in the press box? Someone did that this week.
I probably was that person. In eighth grade, I checked the wrong box. I thought I was taking Spanish. I signed up for French. I took 8 years of it thereafter. Really,
you took
really
8 years of French?
Yeah, I really did not steer out
it's
of that
too
mistake.
Bad there's no French baseball players
or French anything, unless I wanted to go to Canada, which I don't, because as I said, I've been out of the country literally one time in my life. So that's it was a huge mistake. I'm not gonna lie to you. One of the many things that I have done wrong in my life, and it got me an eclipse.
Paris was a mistake.
No, learning French was a mistake. Oh. But I did get to go to Paris, which was cool. Paris, cool town. Great time. I was over my head with the French. Learned a lot of French in those 9 days. But the Milwaukee Brewers are 6-2.
Speaking of the French.
Unfortunately, I do not have a good... because Edouard Julien does not play for the Milwaukee Brewers, although we did see him at American Family Field this week with the Minnesota Twins, but couldn't drum up the right segue to this. And that is, Kurt, yes, they are 6-2, but oh my goodness, the pitching staff needs reinforcements. Jacob Junis went on the injured list this on Sunday. Pat Murphy had even said coming out of his start back in the home opener that he had the term is scratchy shoulder. So, and he is a starting pitcher. I don't even think of him honestly as like a full blown member of the rotation because he only went three and a half innings, four innings. I don't actually remember, but you know, like
they're all outfielders now.
Exactly. Again. They really have two starters. It's Freddy Peralta and it's Colin Ray until like DL Hall can be trusted to go deeper into a game, I think. So wow, that's interesting. Jacob Junis is on the injured list. Trevor McGill fell and hit his head after a dizzy spell with some food poisoning. He is now on the concussion list. So they're down one of their top relievers, which is a big blow. Wade Miley's still working his way back from injury. It sounds like he'll be back soon, but they just don't have pitchers. And, you know, we do have an interview with DL Hall that won't be on the YouTube broadcast, but it will be part of the audio broadcast at the end of this. Chatted with him, before a Brewers game to get to know him a little bit. And we'll talk about him a little bit. I think two starts in there's still big room for improvement there, but this staff, Kurt, is worrisome, you know, on paper, you said going into the year, there's a plan. It's going to be a lot of multi-inning relief efforts. We saw that with Thiago Vieira on Sunday and Brian Hudson previously and Elvis Peguero, like, yes, they're holding to that, but that is such a hard thing to sustain. And I don't know where the starters are going to come from with Robert Gasser hurt. A lot of guys still kind of too far away. Like there isn't a starter out there that they could just like add on, you know. Even Julio Teheran is off the market now.
$2.5 million. He got paid.
The Mets, I have to say, were in worse shape than the Brewers.
The Mets.
I if they had a chance at Jordan Montgomery, who ended up signing for I think a reasonable amount of money with Arizona, they should have done that. It feels like they are woefully short, and I don't want to undersell how great of a start 6-2 is. I don't want to make it sound like.
I was literally going to start my response by saying, and the Brewers are 6-2.
Yeah. I don't want to make it sound like it's negative, but who is, this is the most unsustainable craziness outside of Sunday. Their offense has not been awesome. So it's just a matter of when this thing falls apart on the pitching side. And, you know, maybe that is pessimistic. I don't know, but talk to me about what you think of when you think of this pitching staff.
I do think the pitching staff is the story of the first 8 days or first 8 games, both good and bad. Colin Ray has looked awesome. Freddy Peralta has looked awesome, minus one inning where he may or may not have been tipping pitches. Pat Murphy and him had different things to say about that. But yeah, aside from that, just lots of question marks about how these innings are going to come together and how the bullpen is going to be able to hold up over the course of 162 games. When they don't have Devin Williams for what, at least two of those months?
Mm-hmm.
Big questions. We saw the bullpen blow their first game of the season on, what was that, Wednesday against the Twins. They ended up blowing the lead again twice, although Freddy Peralta was really the one that blew it the first time in Friday's win. So it is going to remain the big question. And now, okay, you go to six-man rotation, which seems to be the plan. Wade Miley's coming back next week. Aaron Ashby will make a start. But if I'm doing the math correctly, with a maximum of 13 pitchers, JR, that takes one guy away from your bullpen.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to option someone down for Wade Miley out of the bullpen, unless they just send Aaron Ashby, you know, they just put him through one time and then send Aaron Ashby down. That's a possibility. But still, if they go to six man, that's one fewer guy. And it's just going to be interesting if they don't have an offense that scores 6-7 runs a lot of nights. This picture gets very tricky. The puzzle pieces are flipped over. There's one underneath the couch. My dog Moose just ate one. Emma, my 2-year-old daughter, threw one in the toilet. Like, the puzzle is all over the place, and it's going to be very tricky to put together over the course of 162. And that said, the Brewers are 6-2.
Yeah, we could keep adding that caveat. This is a great start to the season, no questions asked. But I guess, like, early in the season, you sort of look for trends and you look for things that might be warning signs. And I just feel like this is a huge one. Now, Aaron Ashby has been activated. Yeah. We haven't seen Aaron Ashby's velocity anything close to what we expect.
I think we talked about Aaron Ashby as sort of a swing guy early in the season because you don't know at all what you're going to get from him, and you're probably going to need a fair amount of innings from him. The velocity was really, really down. I mean, really, it's been down, and it was down in his first AAA start. They're classifying all his two-seamers as change-ups. That's kind of where it's at relative to where he used to be, you know, throwing 96, 97. That much has not come back yet. it might still come back, but it's not there. So it's, yeah, we'll see how that outing for him goes Monday. I mean, he's still a guy that's got able to spin it really well. He's got good secondaries. Like, the fastballs aren't super duper duper fast, but the sinker still got some good movement on it. So I'm very curious to see how that goes. If it goes poorly, I don't know. Does he stay in the rotation? But if it does go well, then Aaron Ashby keeps getting more chances, and I think that then raises your floor of this team significantly, because he's a guy who should and can go six innings in a good start.
Yeah, I just don't know if I believe that based on the results we've seen from him that it can go well. You know, that you could even if he does get outs, he can't go more than four innings. You know, like you're gonna still be in the same place you would be with having a bullpen game. And I mean, again, I come back.
He can go six innings though. Like if it's a two run game, there's no reason he's not stretched out enough to go 80, 90 pitches.
I'm not talking about whether he's stressed out. I'm talking about effectiveness. We haven't seen him at the minors effectively get six innings worth of outs.
Well, I mean, he went out for the sixth inning in the last start, but then I think it rained. So,
okay. I'm shortchanging him a little bit.
The trick in my mind right now is, like, we have not seen Aaron Ashby succeed in this form.
Yes.
Whether it's spring training or at the end of last year, when he tried making some rehab starts, the first start of AAA was fine, but it wasn't exactly, you know, blow your socks off. So
he's
going to have to, like, figure it out in a way that he hasn't really had to figure it out in the past. It's just a different path to success. And sometimes that's you got to have some faith to believe that that's going to be able to happen. And when you haven't seen it happen, a little trickier.
Yeah. JB Bukauskas is here. He was called up. That's a good call by one Kurt Hoag, who I think when we were throwing around kind of some random projections at the end, who is the first person called up? And you immediately said JB Bukauskas. Shouts to you.
That was easy, though.
You know what? I had Zach Edey first overall in my player draft, and I'm going to win my NCAA player draft, barring a disaster on Monday night, because sometimes you just got to make the easy call. The Edey call. Love that. Here's the problem.
Purdue stinks, by the way.
Oh, they're so bad. Okay. Yes. They do stink, I think. But I mean, they've played very well in this tournament. I do not. I agree with you.
I am isolating the two incidents. Also, their brand stinks. They lost to Wisconsin. And let me tell you, brother, Wisconsin stunk.
You are using this piece of, I mean, you are very upset about them winning against Wisconsin in the regular season this year, and also being the team to get the one seed out of the Big Ten. I get that. I just think that they've been tremendous. They beat Tennessee in a way that I thought was really impressive. Let's get away from that though, because Purdue on Connecticut, I'm really looking forward to that.
Brian Hudson has a nice hook shot.
Oh, I bet he does too. Didn't he talk to our colleague Todd Rosiak about his basketball acumen? Once you cross that 6-7 threshold, people are going to ask you about that. It just doesn't matter. They got great post presence on this team when McGill and Hudson are both available and healthy. They don't have pitchers on this 40-man roster. They don't. No. They barely have any that are going to be available.
It's all infielders. Like, their entire AAA infield is basically on the 40-man.
Literally the only three pitchers that are on the 40-man that are healthy and not here yet are Jansen Junk, who has not impressed just yet.
Using as a starter.
Bradley Blaylock,
Nasty double A start.
Yeah, we're going to see him this year, I'm convinced, after that start. That was a 1-0 Shuckers win, but that's double A. And then Vladimir Gutierrez, who's a player that they just signed this week.
He exists.
Off of waivers, he exists. He is not a baseball reference page you want to pull up. I'm not saying that, you know, maybe the Brewers have some, you know, mystery fix there. I'm not going to rule that out, of course, but that's literally all the guys they have available on the 40-man who are not hurt or already on the big league roster. It is, Kurt, I want to remind you, it's the second full week of the Major League Baseball season, and they are out of pitchers.
McGill, so that's the interesting thing. It's like, the Brewers do have some depth. They have starting depth, and in that, like, you go to that spring training room, and, like, you could see nine guys making some decent starts for them this year. But the trick with that is like a lot of hinges on Ashby, and Robert Gasser's hurt right now, not back till, I would venture to guess, like I wouldn't expect him to see him in games until late April at the earliest.
Yeah. Well, I was even going to say maybe like June 1 is the time to expect.
Well, I mean, in Milwaukee, maybe May, but because they're probably going to want to have him make some starts at AAA. So like depth goes away a little quicker in the starting rotation, and then the bullpen. Yeah, their bullpen 40-man options are in the big leagues, or Trevor McGill, who's hurt. So, and McGill will come back. That'll help big time. There's like three spots this week where you go, oh, this is a Trevor McGill. Oh, wait, he can't pitch. He's hurt. So, yeah, can I throw a name out there? I'm going to throw a name out there.
Is it Jesus Luzardo? That's the name I am interested in discussing, but go ahead.
No, although the Marlins absolutely should sell.
They are in a bad, bad place.
Tobias Myers.
Okay. Hold on.
Possibility. Possibility.
Here's what I know about Tobias Myers.
You know who Tobias Myers is?
I do. But here's why I know who he is. I know him because the Cleveland accidentally traded him for Junior Caminero, yes. Who is one of the best prospects in baseball and a future superstar. They traded him to they acquired Tobias Myers for Caminero. Tobias Myers was subsequently released and picked up by the Brewers, but has had some success in the minors. So you think he's somebody who could fill a spot here at some point?
Yeah, I mean, it's no fault of Tobias Myers.
Oh, no, poor guy.
He's a 25-year-old who's, you know, barely played at AAA, like barely played above AA. And so what he's known for is being in the Junior Caminero trade. But let's talk about his stuff for a second. And I mean, literally a second. Not literally, but you know what I mean?
Sure.
Not too long. The fastball, the metrics on it, absurd. Like it kind of defies gravity. It looks like it rises. And then his secondaries are pretty nasty too. So if you look at his baseball reference page, you look at the AA numbers, you're probably like, how, what are you talking about, Kurt? But his first outing with Nashville, I don't know if it's first outing, but his last outing with Nashville, utterly disgusting. Definitely seems like a long bullpen kind of guy for me. He's not on the 40 man right now, but that's a quick fix. See you, Vinny Capra.
Sorry, Vinny Capra. Or who else? Who else is in danger?
Chris Roller.
Yeah, Chris Roller might be the next guy down, or there's some 60-man DL moves to make, IL moves to make, I should say. But speaking of DL, DL Hall is another guy who has that elite fastball. And again, I do have that interview with him. If you are listening to this in, you know, normal podcast format, that'll be coming up at the end. Two starts now for DL Hall. Hasn't been great. Hasn't been terrible. But again, and I go back to this, like that's a guy that I feel like, especially with the starters the way they are, with, you know, with Joe Ross struggling and, you know, Wade Miley not being healthy, like I really feel like there is added emphasis on what DL Hall can do for you. And I'm not, you know, through two starts, you're not seeing a guy who's going to be able to go 6-7 innings, but there's obviously still a lot of talent there. Second start in, any thoughts there? I know the first start was really hit and miss, lower velocity than you might expect. What about the second start?
I thought the second start was better.
Okay.
And some of the swing and miss came along as it went on. That second, was the second or third inning for him where he just got singled to death, was really tough.
A lot of soft contact.
It was a lot of soft contact.
Mm-hmm.
It was. Feels like, you know, every pitcher kind of goes through that at some point, and that was certainly his time. Yeah, maybe room to find some more swing and miss, but the velo is better. This is a developmental player for sure. You're not going to have him come in and rock the world right away, but you can see some of the flashes of it, and it's worth it to kind of ride it out with him still for sure.
All right, the other side of the equation, we had seen, I think, pretty credible offense. I think they'd done a good job. And then Sunday came. William Contreras has an incredible day. He misses a 3-home run day by, I don't know what, 3 inches. I don't even know how it hit the top of the wall and bounced back. Crazy stuff that ended up getting thrown out at second, which in retrospect is kind of funny. But you know, 2 home runs beside that, 4 hits, tremendous work. I think the offense is good. I just don't know if they haven't scored the runs. You know, we'll talk about Jackson Churio having, you know, his first 2 big league home runs. Christian Yelich with a bomb, hitting some really nice pull shot side home back runs. He might be back. He looks great. Although, speaking of back, he was sitting out Sunday with a little bit of an achy, I don't know if it was the back officially. I think it.
It was just main. It was just a day off.
Just a day off. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. Although interesting, we get way more injury information than we used to. From Craig Counsell would not, you know, give you anything. I think Pat Murphy flat out volunteered after Jacob Junis's start that he was, you know, maybe feeling a little not perfect, and that Colin Ray had like a stomach bug today, which might explain why his velocity was a little bit down. It's like you get so much more information than you do otherwise. Really funny. But the offense I think has been good. I think it is a little unfortunate actually how they haven't scored the runs, but they have done enough. You know, 6-2 again, you could credit that to some key hits and whatnot. And then Sunday was really refreshing. So just your week two progress report on what you've seen from the offense thus far.
Can I put a pin in the offense real quick?
Yeah.
You mentioned Colin Ray's stomach bug. I want to read you my favorite quote of the week from Pat Murphy. Of Colin Ray, he said, he's lost a lot of fluids in every way you can.
God. We should all know less about people. Pat Murphy, what is wrong with you?
In a real life press conference. That was said.
My favorite thing from the home opener, when Pat Murphy, first of all, he brings his kids or like his you know, relative young children
his
with him.
His posse of six-year-olds.
Every post game, which I mean, immediately sets a mood. Like, how can you feel other than like this is going to be a good time when there's kids around all the time? He brought them up for opening day, and then he just kept bringing them back, which I thought was great. You know, right away, there's post game after the home opener. Of course, that was a 3-2 Brewers win against Minnesota, and he is done with his questions. He's like, that's it. Like, getting up reluctantly, like, I guess we're done. You know, there were players at that point moving in. You know, it's just so different, man. Like, he just loves the banter. He loves being at the ballpark. He loves talking to the media for now. You know, I don't know if that's the type of thing that lasts a long time, but it is. You kind of have to be on your toes. He's extremely funny. And I think if people are listening to these post games, they know that, but oh boy, are we getting information we did not get before now.
I'm not even sure how much of the full post game airs, because if it's everything, that's even better. Like,
they need sensors.
The beginning and the end is what makes it. Although today, technically the press conference had started and he just obliterated one of Adam McAlvey's questions. just was not having it.
He has a definite faux rivalry. I don't know if that's not the right term, with Adam McAlvey, who is, again, as we've talked about on a previous podcast, just getting back. Go ahead.
If he thinks your question is crappy, he would use a different word to describe it, but again, we're a kid friendly podcast. Six and 7 year olds allowed on this podcast as well. He will say it.
He give you the business.
He also finished today's press conference by saying on to Cincinnati, which I thought was a good gambit.
Yeah, I like that.
Can only be done once though.
Yes, you're right. I mean, I love Adam McAlvey's questions. I think they're very good. And sometimes there just isn't a clear cut question to ask. So it ends up being fluffy, not him or anyone else. It's sort of like, you know, what's something like the identity of your team. And he's like, that's a stupid question.
Which we discussed this on the last podcast.
I know.
I am saying words on a certain topic. Please
just start talking about that topic. Please
provide your words on this topic.
Incredible stuff. Yes, Pat Murphy, a good time. Okay, so we talked about that. Back to the offense. I think it's actually been pretty solid, even though the results
it has. I'm glad you remembered where our pin was, because I was about to go back to the eclipse.
Yes, well, get those sunglasses. Do not stare at the sun.
I will not be looking at the sun for sure. And also, Adam McAlvey, if you're listening, do not look at the sun.
He's only got one eye left. Let's go.
The offense, it entered the day. I saw this on the TV in the clubhouse on Sunday morning. 10th in OPS in baseball, which I would look at that. I mean, I'm not going to look at that too much early in the season anyway, but I would look at that more than runs scored, and the runs had not quite matched up to that yet. Left a lot of guys on base. Their homers just have not and had not come with men on base. I think they've had three total. Hoskins had one, and then Churio Saturday. And then someone
Sunday.
wild Bill Contreras on Sunday. So that's like three out of their 12 homers or so have been with someone on base. A lot of solo homers, but it's not like they haven't had guys on base. So eventually I think it'll turn around. Like, the at bat seems solid. Probably could use a little more hard contact and need some guys to turn it around. Like, Sal Frelick's got to get going a little bit, but yeah, the offense is fine. I think it's not blowing you out of the water. But once a couple guys maybe get going, there's a chance for more days like Sunday.
Yeah. I think Sal Frelick is if there is a concern point, it's that we haven't really, we haven't seen him at his best yet. And we can maybe talk about Gary Sanchez. Maybe that's a three up, three down topic. He has not looked good.
Put a pin in that one.
Yeah. We're talking about the smallest samples. Everyone knows that, but like, you know, Frelick is a guy who's going to lead off a lot. He's right now, he's critical to the, you know, he's the center fielder. Like, at this point, for as many options as they had in center field, he's like the only guy outside of Blake Perkins, who is not yet an everyday player, who can be that guy, you know, in center field. So he's kind of essential. And I don't know if that's a, you know, like, if you're seeing anything different from him than what we saw last year, but there were some red flags last year. He didn't end up as great as he started. He did not end up having a great rookie season offensively. And I don't know, what is your concern level there with what you've seen from Frelick thus far?
And like, he looks a little in between on some decisions. Like, he's just not, it just doesn't seem fully locked in. Although it's starting to come, he looked much better this weekend. Hit a ball that almost destroyed the pitcher's kneecap. 102 off the bat, had another double. So it'll probably come along. I'm still not sure Sal Frelick's ever going to be like a great hitter. And that might have kind of been that's kind of the story on him as a prospect too. High floor, the ceiling's not on the same level as a Churio or someone like that.
Yeah. There was a play in the game they ended up winning on Friday, a ground rule double. Luis Urias, I'm pretty sure. Luis Urias, annoying. He was really quite a problem this weekend against his old team playing for the Mariners. Good to see him. Good to see him kind of landing on his feet. He had a rough year last year. But there was a drive to center field that I kind of thought South Frelick, I was kind of surprised, didn't get to. And I feel like Blake Perkins would have gotten to that. Maybe Joey Weimer even, I don't know, gets to that. So that was kind of surprising. Like, you're talking about some of those, you know, like, not quite fully there, but you know, lots of time for him to get better. Let's go to Jackson Churio corner before we move on to three up, three down. Great week for him. He had his first two big league home runs, both in losses, oddly enough, but again, not looking overmatched, taking walks. Well, a couple walks. He did strike out in that walk-off rally in which four guys walked and he was the only one who didn't, but it is looking really, really promising that he can be an everyday player continuously, that he's not going to need those breaks, that he's not going to need to go back to AAA, at least in the short term. It's looking really good, I think. You know, we're still talking about probably if you have your druthers, he's like the seventh most productive hitter in your lineup, but pretty sweet start, I would say, for Jackson Churio at 20 years old, what he's doing. Give me your thoughts on what you saw from him this week.
Yeah, the homers were good. The homers were great.
They're bombs.
I thought there was a couple of good at-bats he had on Sunday. He took a walk with the bases loaded. It was his first walk since his first plate appearance. He's probably walks. Like, he doesn't need to draw a ton of walks, but you do need to draw some walks. Otherwise, the other categories are probably going to come down too. You got to show some level of plate discipline. Otherwise, it's eventually going to get to a point where guys do not throw you anything in the zone. They don't throw you anything hard. Although I do think it's interesting. I think both of his homers have been against breaking balls. But again, in the zone, he can hit those. But then he flipped a little single to right field on a slider, two-strike slider that was just a tad off the plate, like a pitch you probably have to swing at. So a couple good signs there. Yeah, the plate discipline, the swing decisions certainly leave things to be desired. But he's 20 years old. We kind of saw this with him at Double A last year. He would kind of swing wildly earlier in the year and then sure enough began to figure it out quite a bit by the end of it. So
yeah,
another good week for Jackson Churio, I would surmise.
Yeah, sometimes feels like he's hanging on for dear life defensively, but he's making plays, got that speed, like
he has about. Not had a bad play out there, I don't think yet. No, I don't think there's been one where like, oh, you got to make that play. I don't think he's had that yet, which leads me, by the way, Sal Frelick, I just looked this up, 30% catch probability on that Urias ground rule double. Okay.
So probably it's asking a lot to say he should have
asking a lot. He got pretty close to it. I think Blake Perkins makes the play.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Just my real time perception, but 30%. I can't fault a guy for not getting a 30% ball.
Live, I thought it was a bit of a late break. But he makes up for a lot with his speed. Mm-hmm, that seems to be what happened.
All right. Let's go into some of the more granular details from the week. We got a lot of good ones this week in our first full week of the Milwaukee Brewers season. It is three up, three down. Easy as one, two, three. Do you want to go first again for the second week in a row?
No, I got some good cooked up for the first one, so I'm going to let you go.
All right, let's go.
I'm gonna set the table, allow it to marinate. You got to let the brisket sit out for an hour.
Let's go back to the home opener. Now, there's a lot we could talk about from the home opener. Talk about parking a car, maybe. There's the reference there is that the vendor in charge of the Brewers' new parking system did not seem to have the proper capacity to handle the opening day crowd.
Did it get better by the end of the week, by the way? Does anyone know? Do you know?
I don't. Well, does anyone know?
Tweet at me if you inserted a car into the parking lot.
Yeah, I will say this. We didn't hear widespread complaints about it like we did on opening day. So I imagine it's, you know, can I just say this too? This isn't even my first one from 303 down. I do think this system is kind of sweet. I think it is going to cut down on getting into the stadium. You know, it is frustrating when you got all your gear ready to go and tailgating and you've got to sit in a line for people to collect money. And some people are much, much slower than others. So I kind of love the system in concept. Love might be strong. I did expect that there would be problems. These are not the problems that I thought they'd have. It was a capacity issue. I didn't even think about that. So it ultimately might not be their fault. I like the idea of the system. I think it's going to catch on. So I don't want to make it sound like that we're constantly dumping on the Brewers for stuff like this, because this one legitimately sounds like it was out of their hands. But, it was easy to forecast that something wouldn't go right off the bat. And they needed it to go right because they got a massive concert coming this next weekend to American Family Field with Luke Combs coming there for, I think, two shows. So they absolutely had to get this up and running over the weekend. So you would hope that they got everything ironed out, but that's where the rubber really hits the road. Cause that is a sellout. Those are sellouts. So we'll see how that goes.
Can they get some acts that I'm interested in?
I mean, are you the type of person who likes bands that are going to sell out Major League Baseball stadiums outside of Taylor Swift?
I was just going to say, do you know where I'm going in November?
I do. You're going to Indianapolis, which I believe is where Taylor Swift will be on that particular day.
Yep. And part of me died multiple times, 9 years ago, 10 years ago. Final Four. We don't need to talk about it. I see.
2015. Yeah, we're going back there. Yeah, right. In the football stadium at Lucas Oil, she will not play in Wisconsin. There's no venue outside of Lambeau Field that can hold her. And I would say Green Bay is probably not where you're going to find a Taylor Swift concert. So this is the best shot you got. Let's go three up, three down. Okay, opening day. Abner Uribe doing the splits, kind of on the double play in the ninth inning. He comes in for that save. It's a one run game. Cowboy by Kid Rock is his shocking choice for walk-in music. He said after, yes, I want to be a cowboy. Love that line. Love that quote. And he puts a runner on and then winds up covering first base on a double play footwork. Not great, but it leads to an incredible moment where he's doing the splits, wild stuff, gets the out. The Brewers get the save. They win a one-run game, 3-2. I think that was the final there. So Abner Uribe, you have said this before. He can't miss TV, basically. And he's going to give you give you some wildness occasionally. He's going to give you some tons of emotion and a pretty good chance you're going to see something you haven't seen before. Maybe it's a 100 mile an hour, whatever, on the black of the plate. But mostly he is a heck of a personality, and there's a lot going on there. And I love watching him pitch. You know, we saw later that it's not always clean, but fun stuff there and a great play.
Noted eclectic music enjoyer, Abner Uribe.
I mean, I would not expect him to be a Kid Rock guy, but what am I?
I could see him being a Swiftie. If he's not, I'm gonna put him on. If not, I'm gonna put that in my Baltimore trip to do.
Abner Uribe, come on the pod. Talk about your Taylor Swift fandom.
Ooh, we should do that.
We should. Would that not be a great just conversation? Like, forget baseball. Let's talk about top five Taylor Swift songs.
Yeah, I don't know if people will tune in for Taylor Swift content. Maybe they would. Maybe they would, but I'll find the Swiftie on the team and I will talk to them.
You don't think we hit the Swift audience, huh? We're not that kind of people.
There's probably some crossover. I mean, you know, she got me.
Yeah, you are in fact in love with the
and I'm peak man.
I don't know what that means. I went to a concert at Pfizer Forum on Tuesday, saw Jimmy Eat World and Fall Out Boy, two bands that I actually do love quite a bit.
That's awesome.
I've always loved Jimmy Eat World. They are my number one probably, but Fall Out Boy is a band that I feel guilty for liking. I feel wrong about that. That doesn't feel like something 40-year-old bald dude should be into, but I know a lot of the words.
I felt from Taylor Swift from like 2012 to 2014.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like cider drinking, which I also do. I used to feel guilty about that. And then it became in vogue. That's what happened to you with Taylor Swift. At some point that became normal. And universal, and now you're just, you know, you're just like everybody else. It's great.
What do you got for continue this?
Yeah, that
pin we placed in Gary Sanchez, who popped out on a 39-mile-per-hour Evis from Josh Rojas on Sunday. Yeah. Let's revisit that pin. Okay. Gary Sanchez is over 12 with the Brewers. He has not gotten on base in 12 plate appearances. JR, I have done the legwork on Stathead. This is my own remember when.
Oh, I'm excited.
The longest stretches to begin a tenure with the Brewers without a hit and without getting on base. The longest without a hit, I'm sure you actually do you have a guess for this? I think you could probably get it.
Brad Nelson is my guess.
No. It's
Craig Counsell.
Brooks Conrad.
Yes, former Braves third baseman, briefly a Milwaukee Brewer. Interesting.
27 at bats.
I feel like Craig Counsell had one longer than that. I thought it was like 40 or something.
To start your Brewers tenure.
I see.
Craig Counsell is like one of the longest in MLB history.
Is it really not Brad Nelson? That's
which he loved to talk about as manager, by the way. He would love it when you brought that up.
If it were Pat Murphy, he would bring it up on the regular. Craig Counsell, not that guy.
He's a bit ashamed, maybe a bit ashamed of it, which 43 at-bats in the big leagues. Anyway, Brooks Conrad, number one at 27. The next highest, Keon Broxton. Do you remember that in 2016? He was terrible to start. And then second half of the year, he went nuclear and I think whitewashed our memory of, I was actually talking with about 2016 Keon Broxton with Matt Arnold this week, reminiscing about how he hit the ball hard and also struck out a lot.
Elite center fielder, though. That was like that was the Blake Perkins before there was Blake Perkins. Like,
that's amazing. Perfect comp minus the strikeouts. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it is Greg Zaun with 21 and someone named Gerald Williams, I think from 1996 with 21.
Oh, I remember that. Gerald Williams, I believe, is in the trade. The Graham Lloyd, the aborted Pat Listash trade with the Yankees. Bob Wickman is in there, maybe?
Put that on next week's like remember when.
Yeah, I'm mixing up my Yankees trades there.
So let's just do some other names. The other guys that have 15 or more at-bats without a hit to begin their Brewers tenure, in no particular order, Enrique Cruz, Jorge Fabregas, Kelly Stinnett was a Brewer, Dave Huppert, Tony Muser, who should have done less time thinking and more time hitting, Kurt Bevacqua, and Jim Gosker. And that's then to cap this off, JR, the record for plate appearance without reaching base at all, it goes to Gerald Williams with 23, reaching base. Gerald. So Gary Sanchez needs to go 12 more plate appearances without reaching base to set a wonderful record. That list, all the plate appearances without reaching, same guys, plus Jeff Bianchi, 15 plate appearances.
Wow, there are so many interesting names there. I mean, Enrique Cruz jumps out quickly. That's a Rule 5 kid who was legitimately completely overmatched that first year in the big leagues. I mean, he was completely overmatched, but had a big upside. Lots of catchers. I heard Greg with the double G and Jorge Fabregas.
Was my name, was my guy to remember from that list.
Yeah. August 23rd, 1996, Yankees trade Bob Wickman and Gerald Williams to the Brewers for Pat Listash, Graham Lloyd, a player to be named later, Ricky Bonus, ended up going to the Yankees to complete the trade. Pat Listash returned to the Brewers because he was hurt. A lot going on there.
But they kept the trade?
Yeah, they just they sent Listash back, and I don't remember ultimately what that comp was. I don't know if that was what Ricky Bonus became the player to be named later.
That makes sense.
A higher level player to be named later because of that. Ricky Bonus, all-star, Milwaukee Brewers all-star. Lots happening there. Gary Sanchez struggling bad and almost hit DL Hall with a with a throw down to second base to try to catch a base stealer. Like, legitimately, D.L. Hall had to do some matrix action to get out of a seed from Gary Sanchez. Gary Sanchez has a very strong throwing arm that might have ended D.L. Hall. So great for him to get out of the way. But like, what is happening there? That's wild. So
Eric Haas, you.
Well, because that brings me to my next one. Underrated minor league addition that the Brewers made this week, and that was Francisco Mejia, who was brought in formerly of the Rays and a few other places. He is now at Nashville. He actually had a hit, I think, that first night with Class A Nashville, Triple A Nashville. And Francisco Mejia is interesting because let's do more trades. Remember when
this
trades
going to be your remember when this week?
It is not actually. You know what? I should have done that in retrospect. I have regrets. 2016, Jonathan Lucroy was about to be traded to the Cleveland, then the Indians, now the Guardians. Of course, the Guardians would have sent Yu Chang, Greg Allen, and Francisco Mejia, a very highly regarded catching prospect at the time. In return, Jonathan Lucroy said, no,
Sean Armstrong in that deal too?
Oh, yes, you're right. Sean Armstrong, if he was...
Why do I know that?
I don't know.
Why do I know that?
The Lucroy vetoed the trade. So instead, the Brewers sent Lucroy and Jeremy Jeffress to the Texas Rangers for Lewis Brinson, Ryan Cordell, Luis Ortiz... blanket on the fourth name now that I have this in my head, but anyway, Lewis Brinson winds up becoming part of the Christian Yelich trade. So it does work out for the Brewers. Jeremy Jeffress ends up coming back and ends up being nails in 2018, as I'm sure many people remember. So just an interesting sliding doors moment. Mejia didn't really work out as a star in the big leagues, you know, not yet. Not although
player.
I think that ship has sailed. He was with San Diego, I think, for a second there. So, so yeah, we may see him this year because I don't know what's up with catching. Jefferson Caro is out for a long time at AAA with a shoulder injury. So it's interesting, interesting addition, I felt.
Yeah, getting Eric Haas to get through waivers might actually be a big deal at some point.
Yeah,
I was surprised it happened. I think the Brewers were too. I'll go to Oliver Dunn. Let's talk about Oliver Dunn.
We haven't said his name yet. Let's go.
He's good. He can hit.
Yeah, hit a bomb.
Unabashed Oliver Dunn can hit. And if I'm wrong, egg on my face. But I think they have their third baseman.
You think he could be the guy all year long? That's interesting.
No reason he can't.
Made a great diving play on opening day. Hit a bomb for his first career home
run.
The
defense certainly seems passable. He hits the ball hard, and his ball strike recognition, very good. He'll swing and miss. Like, that's there, but he hits the ball hard to make up for it. And he's kind of sneaky fast. Doesn't strike you as a speedster, but two steals already. Pretty good. Good start. I think he's a third baseman.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if I would have believed that, you know, and I'll wrap it up with my three up, three down with a play that actually Joey Ortiz made at third base on Wednesday. That was in a loss. But the Twins straight up tried a bases loaded bunt with two outs. Manuel Margot, who can fly, you know, kind of like popped it up in between third and the pitcher's mound. And Joey Ortiz pounced on it, made the fastest transfer from the glove to the hand that I think I have ever seen and whipped it over to first base. Originally called safe. They reviewed it. It really was like razor thin. I honestly was surprised they overturned it, but they did. Brewers get out of the inning now that they ended up losing a 3-1 lead in the seventh when Yoel Piamp struggled and gave up a bunch of hits. So it didn't end up mattering, but Joey Ortiz can sling it. I mean, and can flash that leather for sure. I think, you know, we haven't seen him necessarily lock in offensively yet, but he hasn't really had the chance. I still think he's probably the third baseman right now if they have their druthers over Oliver Dunn, but
Oliver Dunn slander.
I mean,
not tolerated.
It's pretty clear, though, that, you know, Oliver Dunn has the better end of the platoon, you know? Like, he's the guy who's going to be in there more often than not, if that's
and
how
the
they
950
look at
OPS.
It. I mean, yeah, like, the numbers are there right now. So, I just was really impressed with that particular play by Joey Ortiz. He comes, obviously, the reputation precedes him, that he is a great defensive player, and we definitely saw it there on Wednesday.
I'm going to cap this off. Walk-off walk. We didn't even talk about it.
We haven't talked about the walk-off walk.
We didn't even bring it up.
Walk-off walk. We really should call it the walk-off walks, though. I mean,
the stat head search I did on this was kind of loose and like not concrete, but boy, oh boy, are there not many instances of a similar situation in baseball history where four guys walk and the game's over. There's even less instances of four guys walk, no balls are put in play at all, the game's over.
Yeah.
Just a funky inning. Andrés Muñoz could not find it. And William Contreras bat flipping a walk-off walk was kind of funny.
Andrés Muñoz is excellent. For people who don't know, like, he's tremendous.
Excellent. I mean, he looked excellent the next night. That's who he is. I don't know if a ton of people caught this. I don't know if the TVs showed it, but there was a brief moment of like no one knew quite what was going on the field because the Mariners wanted an appeal. And the umpire was walking off the field. The home plate umpire was walking off the field. The Brewers running out to Contreras, and they stopped, and it was a second of pause. Didn't matter. He didn't swing. Game over.
Incredible. You, I want to give you a lot of credit here. Your story on that game, on that Friday night walk-off winner, was really, really fun to read. Really cool. You talked to all four guys who drew walks in that inning and talked about what they were looking for. And you would think, Kurt, I would think that a story about four dudes who walked would not be compelling. Gotta be honest. But you made it very fun.
I'm surprised you said that, because it was about four walks. And I was about halfway through like,
Why am I writing about four walks?
That was the reaction how the sauce is made. Sal Frelick and Bryce Turang both kind of had, especially Sal Frelick. When guys have big games, they generally realize, okay, I got to go talk to the media. They'll make their way out at some point. Those guys did not have big games. So they were just chilling and eating.
Yeah.
And eventually the PR director, Mike Vassallo, looks at me and goes, why are you still here? Who do you need to talk to? You want Sal and Bryce? Okay. Weird. So sure enough, he ascertained those two. Sal comes out and is like, you want to talk to me? About what?
Your walk,
silly.
I have this memory, speaking of Adam McAlvey, we talk now a lot about him, apparently. That's just a thing. But back when the Brewers were bad in 2004, 5, 6, I don't remember what it was. Who knows? Those were not salad days for the Milwaukee Brewers. 2005, actually, nice year. But this is like 6 or 7. These are not years.
7 was okay.
Some was a good year. This is probably 6. Keith Ginter was being surrounded. They were surrounding Keith Ginter's locker.
That would have been 04. He was probably gone after that.
All right. So 04.
Why do I know this again? I don't know.
Because we're sickos, Kurt.
He's really handsome, by the way.
Keith
Ginter, wow. All-time handsome Brewers.
Didn't have that on my list. Do you have a list of all-time handsome Brewers? Is that normal?
No, I could probably. I don't have a list. I don't have a note. There's no note on my phone, but I could probably pull it off the top of my head. Scott Bocednik, JJ Hardy.
Oh, interesting. My list is very different. It's Ronnie Belliard, Daniel Vogelback, Rowdy Tellez. But like, let's focus on what we're talking about here. Everybody surrounded, and somebody looked at Adam McAlvey. He's like, what did Keith Ginter do in this game? And Adam looks at the score sheet. Two walks. That's where we were at with the Milwaukee Brewers back then. There was not much to talk about. But yeah, Self-Relic, Bryce Turang, Jake Bowers, and of course, William Contreras, who drew the walk-off walk. What a week. What a series for William Contreras. So that's a win. The walk-off database has been updated. My baby at jsonline.com that keeps track of every walk-off in Milwaukee Brewers history. And, you know, a million different categories, a million different instances. I love it so much.
Keon Broxton also probably makes my list. Andy Wilkins should make yours.
Wow, way off the radar there. Andy Wilkins, I'm not sure I can picture him. I've got to be honest. I'm so sorry.
Wearer of Fat Men Rake t-shirt.
Oh, I love that. John Jaha might be on my list. I have a type. So let's see. What else did we not mention during 3 Up, 3 Down? We could have mentioned, I suppose, that Jackson Churio is the youngest Brewers player to homer since Gary Sheffield in 1988. Hello, 19 years old, soon to be 20 at that point. Gary Sheffield, interesting. He might be a good remember when star-crossed situation there in Milwaukee. But we could have talked a little bit more about the parking situation, but no real need. I think that's it. I think we got it covered. So let's go back in time, Kurt. I missed the boat here where I could have done the 2016 trade for Jonathan Lucroy. Instead, I got something else up my sleeve as we go back in time for your history lesson of the week. It is Remember When.
Red Hot Memory.
know what I'm doing is I'm going to go back to 1974, 50 years ago this week, when Robin Yount made his major league debut. He was 18 years old, and he, of course, it kind of nice little serendipity with Jackson Chourio also starting his career at 20 years old, still 2 years older than Robin Yount was back in 74 when he was invited to make an appearance with the opening day roster. Kurt, when I say the name Del Crandall, what pops into your head? Do you have any relationship to Del Crandall's place in Milwaukee baseball history?
He has appeared. He's on the Walk of Fame ballot.
Yes, he is. And he's not in the Walk of Fame, which I think is kind of awful. He's an 8-time All-Star as a member of the Milwaukee Braves. 8-time All-Star. Could you imagine an 8-time All-Star with the Milwaukee Brewers not being in the Walk of Fame? That would be preposterous, right? So he had a tremendous career as a catcher.
It's not the Braves Walk of Fame.
Right.
We don't need to litigate this now. We don't need to litigate this now. I'm sorry.
No. He is a former Milwaukee Brave, but also a former Milwaukee Brewers manager. He was there for a few seasons. He did not have a successful tenure as Brewers manager. This is early years. And what's interesting about him is that when he started his career, when the Braves were still in Boston, he was a teenager as well, 19-year-old catcher in the big leagues when he made his major league debut. He was the youngest catcher in baseball. I believe he was the youngest player, but I'm not sure about that. He was definitely the youngest starting catcher in baseball history, actually, at the catching position when he started at age 19 in 1949. So there's a little bit of history there when he's manager of the Milwaukee Brewers and says, you know what, we got nothing to lose. 1974 Brewers are not going to be a great team. We got George Scott. They got a few guys, but they're not going to be good. So let's just give Robin Yount a shot. He had been a high schooler the year before, you know, and ended up, he got a little bit of professional experience in the New York Penn League. He had like 3 homers and in, you know, like less than 250 at bats, or roughly 250 at bats. And they said, let's give it a shot. His glove was big league ready at shortstop, and they wanted to give it a shot. And so he did. Now, Robin Yount did not have the success out of the gate that Jackson Chourio did. He started 0-10. He had to go a full week before he got his first hit. There was like a 4-day off stretch there with weather and stuff. And he did finally get his first big league hit. It was a single, just kind of floated through. So Jackson Chourio cannot relate. He had hits in his first 5 big league games before he finally took an offer to start his big league career. But what I really enjoyed was he actually, he did make a couple kind of miscues. He had an opening day defensive miscue. It wasn't an error, but he spiked a throw. It was a tough double play, and he spiked it, and that ended up kind of actually Cecil Cooper took him out playing for the Red Sox at second base. And that broke up a double play that ended up leading to a big 5-run inning and allowed Boston to beat the Brewers on opening day. But a week later, I think it's against Baltimore. I don't have that written down. I should, but he makes a huge error. Yes. April 13th against Baltimore, huge error in the 8th inning that allows the game to be tied. He just kind of botches a ball that ties the game 2-2. And in the bottom half of the, bottom half of the 8th, top half of the 9th. Again, I should take better notes. But in the next inning, he comes to the plate, hits a leadoff home run, gives the Brewers the lead back. That is his first career big league home run. 3-2, the Brewers have the lead. That is how they won the game. So pretty exciting, like atonement there for Robin Yount for his first big league home run. He did not hit a lot of home runs early in his career. I think he had 6 that first season. His next home run would be in late June 22nd. So he was not a masher by any means. But that was it. The start of a very special career. 20 years in the big leagues. Robin Yount was not great out of the gate. First 3-4 years, below average player. If you're looking at like OPS plus, offensively. So defensively was fine. But interesting start to his career. And then of course he ends up being the greatest Brewer in history. So is Jackson Chourio on that track? Probably not. But you never know. You certainly hope for the best there. And he has had a much better start to his first week in the big leagues.
If only we had Twitter.
Robin back Young, in 1974?
First 3 years. You would have eviscerated him on this podcast.
I mean, I just would have asked the question, like, what are we doing here? After you know, like, I get well, it.
Yeah, you're just asking questions.
Just asking questions. You want to sell seats. I get it. There's not a lot cooking. But at some point, you got to give the at-bats to, like, major league players, right? Is Robin Yount a major leaguer?
Well, I think there's also the issue of whomst were those major league players?
A lot of guys you have not heard of. That's right. He was the third overall pick. Players
worse than Robin Yount was back then.
That's right, yeah. He is the third pick in the draft. Like, he is a high pedigree player. He's not just a a rando who like kind of showed up one day, much like Jackson Chourio. There was some buzz around him, and then he makes that debut 50 years ago this week. 20 years with the Milwaukee Brewers. Wild stuff. First ballot Hall of Famer. All right, let's be done with this. Let's throw a little French at you to close things down. It is the take of the week from one Kurt Hoag. It is Kurt Blanche.
Ryan Braun sends it to left center and deep. Get up! Get out of here! Gone for Ryan Braun. He just hit a walk-off homer.
Talk to us, Kurt.
Just got to prepare myself for this one.
You're ready. I love it.
On Friday night, I sent out a tweet.
Oh, a tweet. I love it when your stories start with a tweet.
About the Brewers not wearing their City Connect uniforms that night. A deviation from the norm. Every Friday home game since June of 2022, they've had the light baby powder, whatever hue of blue you want to call it. That's what they've been wearing. Well, this Friday, show up at the ballpark. Oh, that's weird. The City Connect stuff isn't, you know, on the ribbon boards and whatnot. Go down to the clubhouse. Oh, the guys aren't wearing any City Connect stuff. What's going on here? Nose around here, poke around there, you know, put some eyeballs in some lockers. There's no City Connect uniforms here. They simply do not have the City Connect uniforms. And this is not unique to the Brewers either in this situation. There are a lot of teams that are missing uniforms. I'm also fairly sure, but not 1,000% certain on this, but I'm pretty close to it, that their home whites, the pinstripes, they ain't there either. I don't think they have those ones. You notice they wore the creams every single day. Did they wear the creams again on Sunday, or was it the blues? Blues they only wear on the road.
I love those pinstripe uniforms.
It was the cream. It was the creams again. I don't think the pinstripes are, I'm again pretty sure about that. So, due diligence, do your job. Oh, people will be wondering, why aren't they wearing the City Connects? Well, that's why Nike and Fanatics have combined to not have them. Not exactly sure how the supply chain, works out between the two of them, but that's the reality.
What a disaster.
Let's flash forward to Friday night mid game. Mm-hmm. This tweet has caught some steam nationally because, of course, it has. Because you know what? You, the keen baseball observer, have seen things through the pants.
You got to word that differently.
Okay. Can we do that again?
I'm keeping it in. You think I'm taking that out? I'm not taking that out. People need to know.
Okay. You have seen through the pants at times.
That's not better, but keep going.
The pants have been translucent.
The pants are translucent.
Anyway, there was Pantsgate for about 3 weeks in spring training. The jerseys, everyone dislikes them. You can't read the numbers. The players sweat through the grays, and you can see their very detailed sweat patterns. The players don't like how they feel. Like you, the keen observer, has seen how bad the new baseball uniforms are.
Yes.
So of course, when there's more news out about how these uniforms are not being good or not available, people are going to act on it and quote tweet and reply and et cetera, and dunk on Nike and dunk on Fanatics. That's just how it's going to work.
Yes.
So Friday night, I get an email in my inbox from none other than Fanatics Company itself, saying they would like the opportunity to discuss the Brewers uniform situation. We're not really that, mostly my tweet with me and get you to take it down or issue a correction. And guess what, JR? I'm here to say I ain't taking it down, not offering a correction, because guess what? Those jerseys are not here. The baseball season is going on in Major League Baseball. Teams, plural, don't have their uniforms.
It's
what is going on?
Truly unbelievable how we are here.
So there is some level at Fanatics of handling the situation, managing the crisis, crisis communication, a big part of PR. I wouldn't know too much. I only took a couple PR classes in college, no real life experience, but it is a thing you generally want to dabble in. But apparently their crisis communication does not involve, fixing any of the uniforms. Or acknowledging that they will fix them in the future. It's simply getting upset that they're getting dunked on.
Well, I would be upset too, because right now they look like the cheapest, one of the worst companies in America. And it's
is perception reality?
Well, I don't know. Let me ask you something. Let me ponder this. Which, by the way, sidebar, Sean Armstrong got a save today for the Tampa Bay Rays. So shouts to you, Sean Armstrong. Full circle moment there.
What an aside.
Let me ask you this, and I kind of approach this earnestly. There are so many things that we wind up getting hot and bothered about when it comes to pro sports in general, but baseball, whatever. And it ends up going away over time. And I wonder what you think about this particular issue, if that will be the case here. Right now, I feel like from spring training to now, that's a pretty good amount of time where people are still talking about this. The players themselves, of course, talking about it. You know, Andrew Chafin, old friend who struggled last year, full disclosure, but had a really good quote that kind of caught on about how the big league uniform used to mean something. You would like get handed it and it would feel like, wow, this is something. And now it's like, it's just another uniform. You know, it's the same thing you get at a college program. You know, it's in some cases probably not as good as what you get at a college program right now. And maybe that's unfair to say, but this has been going on a while and fans keep pointing it out and keep noticing it. And I know that it's not something they could just snap their fingers and like get you new uniforms by tomorrow. That's not going to happen. If it gets fixed, it's going to take the majority of the season, half the season at least, to kind of rectify. So I don't know if they're going down that path. I don't know if this is something people will care about over time. A lot of this stuff gets swallowed up in the ebb and flow of a baseball season. You just stop caring about, you know, what they look like, which is just a purely aesthetic concern. And which sort of paradoxically puts it more front and center, but also is less important than other things. And I don't know if it'll go away. What do you think? Do you think like by June, we're still going to be talking to uniforms?
Probably not, but I do. A couple of things. One, yeah, I think a lot of people will still notice it. Like, why is that nameplate so small? Like that, I don't think is going away because the fact that it stands out even more now as I watch the regular season than it did in spring training.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't think it's just not going to be as big of a deal, but I do think this, and this might be more of a comment on Fanatics in general. I do think that is a company that in the general American graces has lost it.
I agree.
And yeah, maybe because of that, like there is a large contingent of sports fans who have, whether they've purchased material from Fanatics or they don't like how, you know, this has sort of turned into a monopoly and they can cut corners wherever they want. And, you know, you see posts on social media about how, you know, some of their gear is bad, poor quality, like because I think the perception on Fanatics has gone so far in one direction to where like consumers actively have disdain for them. It's not just a company that you'll forget about. There's some pretty active disdain. I don't think that is quite going anywhere. So, you know, anytime something new pops up, it's going to be associated to this event. And in the grand scheme of things, of course, it doesn't really matter. It's a uniform. It's not really a big deal if the Brewers aren't wearing light blue on a Friday night. It's just part of the thing that makes this sport go around and things, the thing we see them wear, you know, no big deal. It'll die down eventually to answer your question, but I don't think like the disdain is going anywhere. And I will always remember the spring of the translucent pants.
it is the name of my fantasy team right now, translucent pants. You know, it's not like the NFL, which is, I think, bulletproof from stuff like this almost universally. You know, baseball, it's not in as bad a place as people might want you to think it is, but like we're in a weird TV situation where teams are not getting as much money from their TV deals as they used to, where you know, they continue to have problems marketing this game and reaching a younger audience and marketing its stars. And I don't think those problems are helped or hurt or anything at all by this process, but like you don't want to subtract things that make it feel big time. You know, you don't want to make it the feel jersey, like,
yeah, something like that. Yep.
And I mean, I don't know how this affects the retail side. I'm not a jersey person, so maybe, you know, some people will know more than I do, but like I'm in a hurry to go out and buy the jersey that you're seeing. Like even the dark jerseys, you know, dark color jerseys that I really like they look really, you know, and almost, I feel like you can see the stitching, and that just might be me like looking at the Royals on my screen right now, but it's weird. It's just, I don't know how people are going to be in a hurry to get that product. And at some point that's got to trickle down. I don't know. I do think we will move on, but I am interested in, I mean, I feel like this has been a storyline for a good 6 weeks now. And that, as baseball stories go, is that's usually pretty major. So I don't know. Well, I certainly think we're still talking about that more than we're talking about like the Shohei Ohtani thing, which I think took over baseball for a second or two. And now, you know, I'm sure we'll come back to that, but I think that the uniform thing is kind of higher profile right now. It's interesting.
Yeah. It's come back out as the season has begun and gone on. My wife is interested in it. And she's not interested in a ton of baseball stories.
Yeah.
You know, not even when someone writes about four walks.
She doesn't read about that. What, who writes about that crap?
That's uniform stuff is all over TikTok.
Ah,
interesting. And that's the medium. That is the medium for her consuming league-wide baseball news.
Once you're on TikTok,
there's no in between like, between me telling her about Blake Perkins' defense and like national TikTok. I can see their undergarments through the pants. There's like the in-between base, like the Ohtani gambling scandal. We were talking like 2 days after the fact. She was like, "Oh no, I didn't hear about this." So
right.
That's how you know it's big time.
What is Blake Perkins? What does he have to do to get on TikTok? What would it take? What kind of defensive play gets Blake Perkins on TikTok?
I was going to say dance. I feel like Blake Perkins can dance.
I bet he can dance. Yep. I think you're right about that. So like makes a catch, gives a shimmy or something, some sort of dance move. That's going to make it into the algorithm.
Either that or his LinkedIn. Here's a baseball player with a fully updated LinkedIn. That'd be a good TikTok.
It would be a good TikTok. Oh, shouts to Blake Perkins. We're huge fans at this point. I think that's it, Kurt. I think after a really long podcast, we have hit the high points. Any other thoughts before we finally get out of here?
No, I got nothing more to say. I'm talked out.
We had so much talked. Yeah, the Brewers open up. They're in the midst now of a 13 games in 13 days. They are off to Cincinnati to see the Eclipse and face off with the with their first division rivals of the year, the Cincinnati Reds. So we'll see that series starting on Monday, 4-game series to get you going this week. Kurt, thank you for joining me here on the Micro Brew Podcast. We'll talk to you again next week. All right, for those of you who are interested, by the way, in the DL Hall interview, that's coming up next. That's only in the podcast format. If you're seeing us on YouTube, hey, go check us out in audio form, and we will catch you there. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.
My guest is DL Hall, Brewers pitcher, first-year Brewers pitcher, came over from the Baltimore Orioles, I should say, and in his first year with Milwaukee. So we're going to start from the very beginning. I want to know a little bit about Valdosta, Georgia, but I'll start with your name. Who gave you the abbreviation? Your first name is Dayton. Where does DL come from? Was that your parents? Was it a school thing? Where did that come from?
So my grandpa actually started calling me that when I was about 4 years old, maybe a little younger, actually. I think it was when I was like a newborn. He started calling me DL, and then as I got a little bit older in the sports world, it kind of stuck. And then my family still calls me Dayton, but in baseball, in basketball, everything, since I was probably in middle school, I've been DL.
Sure. And do you get ribbing because that used to be the terminology for the injured list, and now you're a baseball player?
Yeah, I definitely heard that a lot. And they changed it to the IL, so that helped.
Yeah. Okay, Valdosta, Georgia, great sports town, a lot of great high school football. I mean, obviously, you're part of that too. So for someone who's never been there, a lot of Brewers fans probably have not. Give me a sense of what that town is like, what that experience was like growing up.
Yeah, it's definitely a smaller town, but not too small. We got a Division II college there. But yeah, it's football country. Everybody around there lives, breathes, and sleeps football. That's all they do. We've produced some pretty good names down there. But yeah, I mean, the whole town shuts down on Fridays. They're at one of the schools watching a football game. So it's football country, and definitely not the biggest baseball town, but trying to change that a little bit.
Yeah. Did ESPN do like a title town thing there or something? Yeah. That might have been a while ago now.
Yeah, we're labeled Title Town USA. We have the most titles of any city that's between our high schools and also the college.
I think the citizens of Green Bay might have a little bit to say about Title Town USA, but we'll allow it. I think that sounds fine. Did you play football, or was baseball always your thing growing up?
Yeah, baseball was definitely my thing, but I played football all the way up until 10th grade. 9th grade was my last year. That was when I stopped playing. got my first college offer for baseball, and I decided to, you know, really stick with that. Kept playing basketball, but mainly just baseball.
Okay. The Brewers used to have a pretty good reliever who had long hair, left-hander, Josh Hader. In that vein, you cut your hair. I was pretty excited when I heard you were coming over, another long-haired lefty that didn't end up working out. So what was the decision there to go with the shorter look this time around?
Yeah, it was in spring training last year. I had already planned on donating my hair, but I was going to wait a little while. And I got down to Florida for spring training last year, and it was too hot, and I was like, I'm chopping it off. So I chopped it all off and got to donate it, so it was pretty cool.
Where did you donate it?
It's called Wigs and Wishes.
Okay,
it's located in New Jersey. I met them through a family friend. It's a great organization, and they make wigs for people battling cancer. So
cool, very awesome. Good. Excellent. This was the first time you were traded to the Brewers this offseason. I'm sure there's pressure there. I'm sure you've been asked about it a lot. Corbin Burnes, the guy going the other way, so... How did you handle that? How did you address the idea of being traded and moving to a new city for the first time?
It was definitely a shock. You know, you never expect it until it happened. So it was definitely a shock. But I'd say also, you know, definitely a blessing to come over here. You know, the track record they have with starting pitching is pretty incredible. So I'm just, you know, glad to be here, glad for the opportunity to be a starter again. So it's been awesome.
Yeah, and as far as starting, was that something they said right away? Like, you are coming here to be a starting pitcher right out of the gate? Was that part of the plan all along?
Yeah, they told me that's what they wanted. You know, you never know how things are going to play out, but they said, you know, we want you to come into spring training as a starter and try and break with the team, and we're going to put you, you know, through the build-up and see how it goes, and everything went pretty well, so it was awesome.
I think you have a sleeve of tattoos on your right arm, right?
Yeah.
I know your area code, zip code, area code is on there. What else is on there?
I'm a super religious. I got Jesus, a portrait of Jesus with him on the cross with the the three crosses behind him.
Okay.
And I also have my siblings all on the back of my arm. My favorite Bible verse on the inside of my arm, Philippians 4:13.
Very good.
I got my high school mascot on my shoulder, and then I have a king's crown. Try and live every day, you know, like a king.
Cool.
That's my goal, is to just live every day to the fullest.
Cool. What was your high school mascot?
Wildcat.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, a Wildcat. Not bad. I saw a video that the Orioles put together about your story going back to Valdosta, and there was a story you told about how your 12U, the 12U team, the U12 team, didn't want you back. Like, they cut you essentially from the team. I'd be curious to know what their reaction, whoever made that decision, what their reaction was as you ascend through high school and become one of the biggest high school prospects in the state of Georgia. There had to have been some regret, right?
Yeah.
A little bit?
Yeah, so I actually, you know, I still know a lot of the guys who played on that team with me and whatnot. And yeah, I'll never forget. I'd gotten a letter in the mail, and they were basically like, "Hey, we don't need you anymore on the roster." And I was like, "Dang, I'm 12 years old. I just got chopped from a travel baseball team." But that was honestly probably one of the biggest turning points. Obviously, I was super young, but
yeah, right.
It was definitely something at a young age that I was like, you know, something that I had to overcome at an earlier age than you would kind of expect. And from that point on, my dad told me, he was like, "Look, from now on, you know, leave no doubt. Don't let them, you know, don't leave it in their hands whether you're good enough or not." So from then on out, I just aimed to prove that I was good enough to play wherever I was at.
What, your fastball regarded as one of the best when you were coming up through the minor leagues. Where does that come from? Is that natural skill? Are there people along the way who cultivated that for you? What do you think?
I think a lot of it's God-given. You know, I was blessed to have a good arm. I always threw really hard, you know, even as a young kid, but I think it was more so putting the pieces together of figuring out where I was throwing it. You know,
yeah.
When I was coming up as a young kid, I always, like I said, I always threw hard, but didn't really have a clue of where it was going. So I feel like over the years, you know, I've gotten a lot of hands on me, a lot of eyes on me that, you know, have helped me in some way, shape, or form learn how to pitch.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was always my biggest thing was learning how to actually be a pitcher and not just a thrower.
Made your debut in 2022 with the Orioles. Do you remember? I know that whole outing didn't necessarily go great, but do you remember the first batters you faced? Do you remember the details of that?
Yeah, I know I had a tougher first inning, and then I struck out the side in the second inning, and that was kind of like, you know,
12 pitches.
Yeah, that was kind of my moment of like, hey, like, you're good enough to be here, settle down and just be you. And ended up throwing decent the rest of the game. obviously didn't go how you wanted it to. It wasn't a perfect outing, but like I said, it was a debut, so that's all you can ask for.
How does that compare to your first start with the Brewers in New York?
Pretty similar feelings, honestly. Definitely didn't feel, the most comfortable. It's still new. Especially starting. I hadn't started a game since my debut, so it kind of felt like my debut all over again. But I was happy. It went a little bit better than the debut. Wish I could have went a little bit longer, but it's all part of the plan, and it was great and just awesome to be able to toe the rubber and start.
Yeah. All right, last one. What do you want Brewers fans to know about you?
I think that they'll get their own opinion of me as the year goes on, but I would say just know that you're getting a bulldog and you're getting a guy that's going to go out there every fifth or sixth day and give everything he's got. Whether it's good or not that day, I'm going to be giving it all I got, and I'm always going to compete more than probably anybody they know.
All right, congratulations. Thank you, D.L. Hall.